What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and this is my conversation with Dan. So this episode's really special to me. It's really special because Dan Cumberland was actually my RA in college. And so we go way back to 2002. And so Dan was just always an amazing guy that was on our floor and just kind of got me through a lot of crazy times in my early Christianity and my early college life. And so it's so cool to kind of circle back and have this conversation with Dan now, like with all these sort of years behind us. And it's really cool. I've gotten to watch him sort of, you know, go post-college into ministry and then to, you know, out to grad school on the West Coast. And then established this amazing thing that he's doing called the Meaning Movement. And so it's just been cool to watch his journey of growing the Meaning Movement. It's been going for about 5 years now. It's a podcast. He has a really cool podcast, just talking to all sorts of great people. I highly recommend you put that in your subscriptions. Just, I mean, he's having a lot of the conversations we're having here just on a different level on finding meaning in your work. And a lot of just, there's just a lot of great content there. It's just this community of people that believes, much like this podcast, that like there is more to work than just getting a paycheck, and that we were created to do something amazing. And so we get into all those conversations with him. His trajectory to the Meaning Movement, though, is very based on his vocation and his vocational history. And so we get into a lot of the depths of why that is, and ways that he's discovered to really understand his vocational journey in different ways. Dan's also an entrepreneur, and he is just doing a lot of stuff. And I think hearing from entrepreneurs that are really high capacity, but sometimes maybe get in over their heads. And we have a great conversation just about, you know, how to balance maybe, or what that looks like, or, you know, how do you choose what to throw yourself into? And there's just such good stuff in this conversation. If you're really searching for sort of meaning in your vocation, if you're searching for maybe what you should be doing, this is the episode for you, no doubt. Dan just is so insightful about the way that vocation works, about, you know, how we should be using our work, about ways that we can better understand our own stories to understand what sort of work will be fulfilling to us. And so there's a lot of great stuff here. I think you'll be encouraged. And even if you are on a career trajectory, I think you'll be encouraged and challenged by the way that Dan thinks about work, by the way he looks at work, by the way he thinks about what's important about work. And so, yeah, this episode has it all. It has just incredible story. And I think it has a really robust time of teaching and sort of building you up in ways that I think are important here. So you're going to love this episode. We reminisce a little bit about our old college days as well, so you get some of that here. So yeah, I can't wait for you to hear from Dan. This is my weekly reminder to leave me a rating and review in iTunes or whatever app you use. It just helps get the word out about Theology of Hustle. You can follow me on Instagram at Theology of Hustle, and then on Twitter at Curry Blanford. So make sure you're following me all those places. You can stay up to date there on what's going on. I also have an email list on my website that will keep you informed. I kind of go through the next, you know, 4 or 5 different episodes coming up, so you just know what to expect from Theology of Hustle. So glad you're here. So glad you're tuning in today to listen to Dan's story, and I hope you enjoy. All right. Well, Dan, I can't say thanks enough for jumping on the podcast with me, man. This is awesome.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. So good to connect.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. Well, let's just start off and just have you introduce yourself to everyone.
Yeah. So my name is Dan. And recently I've been kind of dreading the question of like, so what do you do? Because it's which is really funny for a couple of reasons I'll get into. But just because I'm doing a lot of things right now. And so broadly, when someone asks, you know, who are you? What do you do? I'll say, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I like to start things. Beyond that, I'm a father and a husband, live in Seattle. And I know Curry from college, so that's kind of we're having a throwback session.
Yeah,
right,
this is pretty bizarre, actually. You know, doesn't it feel like that was yesterday, and at the same time, like 1,000 years ago?
That's 100% true. It's like, I mean, we haven't really spoken. I mean, we've touched base a couple times over, you know, in the last, I don't know how many years it's been, but it's like we get on this call and it just feels like we're back in the dorm.
Next door neighbors like we used to be.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I mean, and I could dig into more of that as far as, you know, what I do. I have a project called The Meaning Movement around work and meaning and helping people figure out what to do with their lives, which is, I think, why it's kind of ironic that right now I've been kind of not wanting to answer that question. But the truth is, you know, for me, is I've found my way in work and I guess embracing who I am, embracing who God's made me to be. Like, it's I'm a starter. I like to have too many irons in the fire, and one of those irons is the Meaning Movement, and then there are a couple others as well. I'm involved in a software company. I'm launching a sales agency, and I'm doing a couple of different real estate related projects. So
wow,
just yeah,
I love it. And it's good.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with being a starter, man. It's it's all good.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a little bit crazy. It's right. A little bit crazy, and you know, like I was saying before we got on the call, got a couple kids at home, and it's just like it all adds up to a lot.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's good. Well, let's start off just by running down your sort of story, because I think a lot of the reason behind the Meaning Movement comes from like your early vocational history, and then like the transition. So, do you mind just walking through that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I, for longest time, didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Struggled a lot in high school and even into college with like really trying to understand, trying to find, you know, just make a decision really about what I wanted. Ended up studying studying biblical studies and music composition. And after college, started a job at a church as a youth pastor, and it was really, really hard. And the fact, Gary, that you're still doing it, I just have like the utmost respect for you, because
I literally
would be dead right now, most likely. it wasn't the right fit, and it took me a really long time. And I think that's the kind of where the weightiest part of my story comes in is there's just this cognitive disconnect between feeling like, at that point, I really felt like this is what I was called to do. And I think especially going to the school that we went to with like ministry is like the highest calling and best thing you could ever do with your life. And anything else, I didn't have an imagination for that. Yeah. And it really felt like, this is what I was supposed to be doing, and it wasn't working. So then what's wrong with me? Because this is all I know. And the only thing that like I've been, you know, at least at that point, the last 6 or 7 or 8 years been kind of focused on. And so then I think a few things happen, like a lot of depression. I think just a lot of questions about God, about myself, you know, like God had called me to this and it wasn't working, then like, you know, what, like, who am I, who is God, who is what's what, you know. It's just very like a very much like an existential depression, a psychological depression. It was really, really tough. And at the same time was leaving this youth ministry. It was kind of this just really interesting contrast that was happening. Interesting now, not as interesting then, but just like at the same time as that was happening, it was like building this really amazing community of students that I'm still good friends with. My wife and I are officiating a wedding of one of them in next month. Like, and that was, it was almost 10 years ago now that I left that position. And it took a long time to start really parsing out what was wrong, and to really start, I guess, changing the question to like, what's wrong with me, to, you know, realizing that I'm not the problem, the job's the problem. And so then the question became, you know, so what else should I do? And it's easy to say that, but to make that transition was, it took a ton of personal growth, and a lot of questions, a lot of conversations, a lot of searching. Still didn't have any answers, but left that position, went to go to grad school to really explore around the intersection of work and meaning, that intersection that I had, you know, almost died at. knowing that, like, I have a lot of energy around this. I get a lot of have a lot of energy with my students around, you know, what they're going to do with their lives, and there's not a lot of guidance out there, not a lot of, I guess, frameworks for answering those kinds of big questions. And so wanted to kind of explore and see what was there. So went to the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology, did an interdisciplinary degree there. That's part theology, part psychology, kind of like a choose your own adventure program. Still didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, but then kind of through that embrace, I guess it's kind of two things happened. One is it became okay for me to be an entrepreneur, I guess. Like I began to accept that about myself. And then also, like, as I was like really trying to find I was trying to find a job, like, or a career path to step into. And I think that's where that movement towards entrepreneurship kind of happened. I was like, should I be a therapist? Should I be a pastor? Should I be a career counselor? Like, what? Like, I don't know, but I'm like, I know I have a lot of energy around this, and was having like creating a lot of things for other students, and a lot of conversations at the school around work and calling and vocation. And I remember really specifically a conversation I had with a friend who had been coming to a lot of things that I was like kind of instigating, because he was trying to figure out for himself. And he was like, the difference between the way you approach these conversations and the way that I approach these conversations, him speaking, is that he's like, I don't start things for other people about it. I'm just looking for myself. And like, there's something interesting happening here, which is like super helpful from him to like, to mirror that back to me and to see, you know, this is where our interests align in this specific topic, but that your energy for it is really, really unique. And that really helped me kind of embrace that, like, okay, I think calling, vocation, helping people figure out what to do with their lives is what I need to do. And then the question became, you know, so where do I go with that? What do I do with that? And that's where that step to entrepreneurship just eventually kind of emerged. Like, I just need to start my own thing, because I don't want to, it just didn't make sense for me to take any of those more conventional paths. I guess I've always kind of chose the unconventional. So I started the Meaning Movement. I've been doing that for 5 or so years, and then kind of along the way I've gotten myself into a couple other projects, as I mentioned before. I think, you know, I think what's interesting, and I think interesting maybe even to talk about with you and I think for listeners of the show, I think is like the hardest part of that process for me was really leaving youth ministry. It was coming to separate my experience of what I felt like was a calling, and like really separating that, you know, myself from that, and beginning to look at that and wonder about where that came from in my life. And through, you know, all of my, you know, processing, really came to understand that it was my youth pastor that told me I should go into youth ministry. And that whether or not that was, you know, God, I don't know, but a lot of good came out of that, and a lot of pain, and it's sticky and complicated, you know. But I remember a specific conversation with a leadership coach about, as I was considering leaving youth ministry, I was mapping out my kind of last couple of years in front of a small group of people, and then the group would go around and kind of give feedback, and I went up to the board, kind of like, you know, put all the major events that had happened. And then the first thing that the coach said is, he said, who told you you needed to be in youth ministry? And I was like, it made me so angry when he first said that, because I was like, no one, God, I don't know, like internally, but I was just kind of stunned. But it's interesting, kind of that question has stayed with me for a long time, and years later to be able to look back and be like, oh, I guess it was actually my youth pastor that told me that. And, you know, my youth pastor was great. He was a great influence on my life. But I think in some ways that he didn't see me as maybe I needed it to be seen. And obviously at this point, I'm like, yeah, youth ministry wasn't my ultimate calling in life, but an important stepping stone, I guess you could say, in getting me here. So I feel like I went a million different directions with that, but that is the, my story goes a million different directions. So that's what's brought me here.
That's great. No, I love that. And I think you mentioned this briefly, but even talking about where we went to school, we both went to Moody, right?
Yep.
And that ministry really was this like calling above all others.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's malicious in any way. It's just this belief that there sort of was, you know, you were there to be in ministry. And I don't even know until you said that just now that I realized what a profound impact that had on the way I think about the world and what ministry is and calling and
totally. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's why I love that you're doing this podcast, because it kind of helps continue to break down that dichotomy, which is, I think, a false dichotomy. But, you know, I can only speak from my own experience to say that, that polarization of ministry and non-ministry didn't do me well. But and I don't know that it's intentional, but I do think it's probably just, you know, when you get a bunch of people that are excited to go into ministry together, it's kind of just what happens to the culture. I don't know. But
I agree. I always said it was like the best and brightest from every youth group across the nation, you know.
Totally.
It was like I don't know how I fit into all that, but that was what it was.
Yeah.
Let's talk about calling, because how did you break some of that down, and then what does that look like? How do you view calling, I guess, now?
Yeah, oh man.
It's a big question.
Oh, such a big question. I should know that, like, on a show with theology in the title, we're gonna have to answer these big questions. Breaking it down for me, I mean, it came through a lot of personal breakdown, right? And therapy, and a lot of storytelling, really digging into my personal narrative and coming to better understand who I am and how I've become who I am. And, you know, that story, you know, about my youth pastor kind of emerged, you know, from that. And so that's some of the process. But honestly, what's super interesting is I do believe that, you know, there are some people that God puts, you know, some unique trajectory on their life, right? And that capital C calling is, like, I'm not gonna argue that. But what I've also seen, particularly as I continue to work in this realm and work with clients, like the people that often struggle the most are people who have come from a, you know, very, very religious place where that capital C calling has probably more weight than it should.
Sure.
And what I've come to understand about calling is that, from what I've seen, so preface this. I feel like I'm a lawyer about to give law advice. This is not legal advice. This is only my experience. That God calls you through who you are, by in alignment with how you are made, right? And that is the place that, when it comes to looking for clues to what you should do and what you're called to do, if that's the word that you want to use, that the place that you need to look is in your own story and in your own formation and who you are, and that there's going to be an alignment between the two, and the problems arise when there isn't an alignment. And I know some people will disagree with me on that, and I've had those debates and discussions when, you know, some people will say that, you know, well, God calls you no matter what to do whatever. And if that works for you, then so be it. But I've also seen that cause a lot of pain, and a lot of confusion and a lot of struggle and even a lot of, I don't know, doubt and disbelief, ultimately, because that kind of paradigm can lead you to some really dark places. So I think of, when I use the word calling, I don't typically put a capital C in front of it. I think that to be true to a calling is to be true to who you are, and I don't mean that in like a woo woo way, but like to who you were made to be. And I believe that we're made to be a particular person in a particular place in a particular time for a particular reason. So aligning those things, I guess, is how I think about calling.
Yeah, I think that's healthy, because we get this like notion that there's this specific thing that we're supposed to be doing, and then like we're trying to attain that even if like the pieces don't necessarily fit, right? And that's where that cognitive dissonance sort of comes in.
Totally. Yeah. No, that's exactly true to my experience. And I think the other piece is, you know, we often think that that calling should come down from this mountaintop experience where the clouds open and this
right.
beam of light shines down and say, you must go and do whatever, which is also not typically how it works. And in my experience of what I've seen in you know, my own life and in clients is that it's very fluid, and it takes time and it takes a lot of self-knowledge, and that it can change. It can change manifestations, right? So your calling is not a job. It's a orientation of impact and legacy, of a part of some sort of change that you want to be a part of making in the world, and then that can take shape through 1,000 different jobs, vocations, you know, volunteer opportunities, projects, entrepreneurial endeavors, or whatever might be.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a healthy way to be thinking about this whole thing. Even like not necessarily a job per se, you know, you can find that meaning elsewhere. And, you know, maybe for a time you're in a job that just makes money, and that's like okay.
Yeah.
You know,
it's more than okay. It's fantastic, actually. Like, and I think that's also, you know, even just where I am right now with having too many projects and also, you know, less time and having kids, like feels like you kind of moved down the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like to more like these base levels. Right. Like, yeah, if we're just paying the bills this month, I'm doing okay, you know, and I'm going to worry about all that meaning stuff next month, you know? right. And like, I think along with that, like comes the question of privilege, and, you know, that it is a privilege to be able to think and dream about, you know, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
But it's also important to note that like paying the bills and caring for your loved ones is a profoundly meaningful activity. And
right.
who am I to say that just making ends meet isn't like a calling or a meaningful endeavor? It absolutely is. So I think, I think money and meaning, they always play together, those two concepts.
Right, that's good. No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So, like, can you give me just maybe the overview of how you would take somebody through this process? Like, what does it even mean to find self-knowledge, or how do you go about that?
So the first thing I do with people is get them thinking about where they are and how they've come to be where they are, because they're coming to me for a specific reason. Not everyone is looking for help figuring out what to do with their lives, right?
Right.
And so there's something that has happened in their life that's kind of started the conversation. So what is that event, and how did it happen? Why did it happen? There's always some significant event. It doesn't just like, it's not like, yeah, I'm bored today, I'm going to go ponder the meaning of existence, right?
right.
But typically there's some sort of, I think of it as an inciting incident, you know, to borrow from story form, like a story starts, a good book, a good plot starts with some sort of inciting incident that jumpstarts the narrative. And so it could be, you know, a death in the family. It could be the loss of a job. It could be a health scare. It could be a divorce. It could be any number of things, or it could also just be like this growing sense of discontent that what you're doing, the path that you're going down, like isn't working to the point that it becomes a crisis. So what is that, you know, what is it that's brought you here? And then what are the questions that you're asking out of that? So like, what are the things that you're trying, and where are you looking, you know, for solutions? What have you tried so far? And then one of the most important questions is exploring who, like, what are the voices that have guided you thus far, both for good and for ill. And those can be, you know, individuals, people, teachers, mentors, parents, friends, family. But it also could be, you know, more generalized, you know, culture or institutions that you've been a part of. And I think that's a big one, is thinking through, you know, what are the cultures, institutions, and what did they say? You know, what are the stories that you have embraced, either purposefully or just by exposure regarding yourself and your work and what you should and shouldn't be doing with your life and should and shouldn't, you know, do and don't, kind of those big words, and start like really looking into those. Cause often there's some sort of tension between them that's keeping you stuck. After digging into like that, I kind of think of that kind of all of that as this is just the making the map, right? Of like, so where are you? Like, what's the terrain that you're on? So just to kind of understand of you know, where we're starting, and then start thinking about, you know, so what are you looking for? What, even if you don't know, right? If you knew what you're looking for, you wouldn't be here, right? But like, what does it feel like? And right. What would success look like for you? To really start to define kind of what we're looking for together. And then from there, we start digging into stories, to looking at, you know, what's the narrative that shaped your life? What are the major events that have become, you know, that have made you who you are? It's really important to start to define for someone what their understanding experientially of goodness is, as well as pain. And you can think of those categories as heaven and hell. You know, what is it particular to them and what they've experienced? And so like thinking through those categories of, you know, tell me the stories of goodness in your life. When you think back to your developmental years, like tell me the story of what your best, like what's life at its best. And I'm sure like you, even listening to this, like you've got things in your mind, you know, right? And like people listening, like you can think of those things, that road trip to Disneyland, or yeah, you know, right. That, you know, that time you went on that hike with your, you know, with your dad, or like I don't know what it is, but like those stories shape you. The reason they jump to mind is because they have a particular significance in your life. And then also the, you know, the other question is like, what do you know of pain and struggle? And typically what you want, like the most meaningful thing that you can do with your life has something to do with those stories. It's usually not a one-for-one correlation. It's like, well, my happiest moment was taking a road trip to Disneyland. I should go work at Disneyland. I mean, maybe it might be a great place to work. I don't know, but probably not. But there's likely something else happening there. Maybe it's about the connection that you had with your family. Maybe it's about I don't know. But like starting to kind of look for themes, and I think that's what's really important between all of those things. What are the themes that emerge from your story, from your narrative? And those themes are clues to, you know, what's most meaningful for you. So moving forward, like kind of digging into the past, like then kind of looking at the present, and you know, where are you finding meaning in the present? What are the things that you're doing that you're, you know, feeling fulfillment from, both inside of work and outside of work? And I think it's important to look at work as a broad category of utilizing your agency. Like what are you doing? like doing is work, right?
Right.
So what are the things that you're doing, the games that you're playing, the art projects you're working on, the books that you're reading, all of those things, and where are you finding the most fulfillment and joy there? And then start dreaming about the future and doing some creative writing around like what, like just starting to like with no expectation that any of these things would ever become a reality, like write a story and I have some specific prompts to, you know, kind of access this, but write a story about the future and what could happen. And again, looking through all of those things for that thematic material to really start to identify like here's the kind of movement, the kind of change, the kind of impact that you want to be a part of making in the world. And so that's some of the process. And then, you know, from that then becomes a question. So then what do you do with that? And that's where it's honestly pretty challenging, because it's like there's a billion different ways. Just like I said, you know, I could be a pastor, I could be a counselor, I could be a therapist, I could, you know, start a business. Like there's a thousand different ways that you can go about doing your work. But starting looking at, you know, what's most interesting, what's possible, what aligns best with, you know, making income and with, you know, the education and experience that you currently have, and like all of those things, to start moving towards that, realizing more of that impact. And then from there, it's an iterative process where it's not like you don't go from not having a clue of what you want to do with your life to like having the best, if you're trying to make money doing something that you absolutely love, it's not going to be the next job that you get. But that's going to be a step in the process that then you're going to learn from, and you can utilize that, you know, help that experience shape your understanding of the work that you want to do, and then keep using that feedback, creating a feedback loop that then moves you further and further towards work that's more and more meaningful for you. So that's a super long, I mean, that was like, Phil, I think that was like 45 minutes of answer. So hopefully now everyone listening knows exactly what to do with their lives. I mean, I'm sure it's hard because it's so abstract, right? Like to just, it's like you're looking at a map, but you don't, like you look at the map at the mall, but there's not like a you are here. Like, I feel like that's what I just gave you.
Right.
And so, but I don't know how else to put it, but hopefully there's something from that everyone can take. And maybe, you know, just to get super practical, because I would hate for someone to listen to all of this and not have something to do coming out of it. Just get out a piece of paper and write down, like, if you're wondering, if you have questions about what's next or what's meaningful or you know, your calling, just start by asking those questions of what are the voices that have shaped you so far? What are the do's, don'ts, shoulds, and should nots? And just brain dump all of those onto a piece of paper, spend like 10, 15 minutes doing that, and then go back through them and assign names as much as possible to each of those. And so if one of those is like, you know, don't work an entry-level job. Like, who told you that? You know, maybe it was your dad. Maybe it was your math teacher. I don't know. But like, just the more specific you can get with some of those things, like we all have those things kind of floating around inside of us, those ideas. And the more we can assign them to specific like people and cultures and institutions, the less power they have over us. The more we're able to give words to it, the less power they have, and the more choice we have whether or not we want to operate under that rule. So just to give kind of at least one small action step out of my verbal, I don't know, the speech I just gave, that would be a great activity for people to do.
That's all that ministry experience coming up, right? You have to have like a practical application.
Well, yeah, I could give you some alliterate. I mean, but it does. The ministry experience does really actually help quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, three alliterated points, right?
No, there are so let me just to get a little more just to get a little more literate on you. So there's and just thinking about impact, thinking about meaning, there's four ways that meaning is that people experience meaning in their work, and they all start with a P because I used to be a pastor.
Okay.
So and so this is helpful as you're thinking about, you know, both what you're doing currently as well as what you want to be doing, right? There's the people, so the people that you're doing it with, the people that you're doing it for. There's the product, so when you're you know, the product of your work. Maybe you work at a software company, you're making a piece of software. Maybe you I don't know, you work in customer service and your product is a good customer service experience, whatever might be. There's the profit, which we already talked about, is actually making money, but not just money, also lifestyle, also all the you know, the benefits. And then there's the process, and the process is it's easiest to think about it as like an artist who loves to create, a painter that loves to paint, the process of doing the actual work. And I think those four categories are really helpful to think about when you're thinking about your both what you're doing right now. So I was talking about like how you're experiencing meaning in the present. Like, think through those four categories in everything that you're doing, and what are the parts, you know, in each of those categories that you, where you're finding meaning, where you're finding fulfillment. And that also is a really helpful guide for you towards, you know, a deeper understanding of who you are and what you're meant to do. So there's some little pastor bit for you there, Curry.
Did you just make that up?
I mean, I did make that up, but I didn't just make that up on the spot.
I was like, what is going on? That was incredible.
And now I'm going to give you the six S's. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. It is an important framework that I often reference. So
I love it. That's helpful.
There's your four P's of meaning and purpose.
There you go. You got them. I'll have to put those in the show notes and like, you know, that's good stuff. I just think even, I mean, that's super practical stuff. Even thinking through like your story in leading up to your career? Because I think we don't do that.
Totally.
It's sort of like that story is in the past. Like, what does it have to do with the now or the future? You know, I think there's value to just even that.
100%. And I think that's where, people come to me wanting to figure out what to do with their lives. And at its best, they leave knowing who they are. And out of that then comes, you know, what to do with your life. But, but I think, there's tremendous value in understanding that.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about, you know, realizing your youth pastor had sort of put you on this trajectory towards youth ministry. Did you have an aha moment when you gave yourself freedom to truly be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do think it was kind of a gradual switch. I think, you know, one of the major moments was really choosing to start the Meaning Movement and just go my own way. I remember having, having breakfast with a friend. We're talking as I was getting close to graduation, I was talking with him about everything. And like, you know, I want to do this stuff around, you know, calling and, you know, looking at maybe doing an internship with like a coach at that point and a few things. And he was like, stop. And he's like, I'm going to write something down for you. And you just need to save this. And then he just wrote, start your own thing. And I was like, at the moment, like, you know, at the time, I was like, this is kind of silly, but I'm like, yeah, he was exactly like calling me to be more of myself in that moment, you know?
Interesting.
And I think over time, gradually, you know, embraced it more and more, but then there's always the tension of like making ends meet and, you know, doing your own thing is not necessarily, it's not necessarily easy to start, you know? And so it's kind of a gradual process, with, you know, I'm also a photographer. My wife and I have a photography company that's still a staple income for us. So it's doing that, you know, trying to get that off the ground, as at the same time as starting the Meaning Movement. And so, yeah, it's kind of like a gradual process, doing it more and more. Was serving tables back in grad school and kind of the first year after grad school till I could kind of take the leap to just doing the other things, you know, more full time. So eventually it was like, yeah, this is what we're doing. But I think was pretty uncomfortable with that title of entrepreneur, because I think of it as like a Silicon Valley kind of, you know, I think that's the meaning that it had in my mind, is like, I'm not raising, you know, millions of dollars of venture capital money yet. Maybe, I don't know. Right. That's just not likely. It's not likely that that's the trajectory I'm going to go on, but it's still, I think, the best word to describe, I think, just some of my energy in the world. So it's just taking me time to get there.
Yeah, no, I think I mean, that's how it is with an entrepreneur, right? I mean, it's rarely like, oh, we're just going to switch over to something else and I'm going to start something new and it's going to be great. Because you look at other entrepreneurs and you're like, hey, you see some success, right? And you're like, oh, man, they're building their brand. And then you start something and you're like, this sucks. And like,
this isn't,
you know,
working.
Like, it takes a long time.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. I'm with you.
And that's where the lies come in, you know? Like maybe this doesn't have value, and maybe nobody really cares, and maybe you're wasting your life.
Totally. And then the question, like, so how long do I stay at it until it works? And does it just need longer, or am I just going down the wrong path? Like, yeah, I get you.
Not that I know anything about it.
Yeah, of course not.
But, right. But as an entrepreneur, I mean, you even said right now you have a lot of irons in the fire, right? I mean, it's easy as a creative and as an entrepreneur, it is super easy to find work that no one wants to pay you for, basically.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you, and I'm sure it's not perfect all the time, but how do you sort of think through some of that?
Yeah. So think through what to do and what not to do, basically.
Yeah. And how balance works and, you know, how to know when to the job.
Yeah.
Balance,
yeah. That's good question. Not my strong suit. the off balance part. I think what's important to me, thinking through, especially opportunities that come my way, is there learning? Is there an opportunity for learning, opportunity for growth here that's in line with where I want to go? So right now, I mentioned I'm starting this sales agency. Kind of that came about through an opportunity to run a software company. So I've been running this a software company for the last about two years. That came about through the Meaning Movement of looking to grow an online company, and didn't know a lot about online, you know, online business, had no formal business training. Through that, a few steps, I'll just, you know, it'll take too long to explain, but I ended up developing a relationship with basically a private equity firm, bought this software company, and they're like, hey, you'd be great to run this. And so then I had this moment of like, okay, do I want to say yes to this, to running a software company? I never thought I'd be running a software company. At first glance, it doesn't seem in line with, you know, I'm doing photography, I'm doing the Meaning Movement. But really, it was an opportunity to grow as an entrepreneur and to learn a ton, manage a team of 14 people, entirely remote, and like work with some people doing business at a really, really high level and learn from them. And you know, the goal is to learn as much as I can and then apply that back to my own projects, down the road. I wouldn't have said yes to that if there wasn't a clear path for me of like personal growth and learning there. Because my goal is to grow my own things, but to put myself in a place where opportunities are available and where learning opportunities in particular are apparent, I think is incredibly valuable. And so I think that's one of the kind of the metrics that I use, you know, to evaluate something is like, is this taking me towards growth? Does this make sense of if I zoom back a little bit and look at, you know, where I want to be, could this be a stepping stone towards getting me there? And then I think also just like, does it sound fun? And is it exciting? It's easy, I think, because of those two metrics. Like, I get excited about a lot of things and there's lots of opportunity for growth.
Right, yeah.
It's easy to feel overwhelmed and to feel like I'm in over my head. And I often feel that way. But there's also, I think, a metaphor that I like to picture myself as like skydiving. I've never been skydiving, but I've got my hand, like you've got your cord that you can pull to like open your parachute. And the game is, how long can I wait till I pull the parachute out? Which, like, really, I think that's the fun part of, I mean, I'm sure it's fun to have your parachute open, but like the point of skydiving is not they don't call it parachuting. They call it skydiving,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so I think that a lot of people live too much of their life with their hand on that parachute cord, like ready to pull it at any, like anytime it feels a little bit out of control. When really, like it's okay to be a little bit out of control. It's okay to let things slip. It's okay to you know, some things might just need to fall through the cracks, and to know that like my life isn't going to be perfectly, absolutely organized. And from the outside, it might feel a little bit chaotic, but I know like by having that as my default mentality, I'm able to say yes to a lot more opportunities and learn and grow a lot more because I'm pushing myself past my comfort zone. Instead of just like, oh, I'm at the edge of my comfort zone, pull out that parachute, let's hit the brakes and go back to, you know, something that's more simple.
Sure. Well, this might just be a personal question then. I guess I'm in a season where I hear a lot of people talking about like sort of settling down and like picking a lane and kind of being an expert in one thing rather than having sort of like expertise in a lot of areas. And I find myself in a place where I feel like I have a little bit of knowledge in a lot of areas. I mean, do you ever feel like it would be better if you just stopped all that stuff and sort of picked a trajectory and just went? Or do you think having knowledge, a breadth of knowledge is like a positive?
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like it feels like such like a dad question. Like, when are you going to,
thank you.
So when are you going to settle down?
Settle down. And yes, right.
I do think there's some wisdom in that. And that, you know, you could argue that that's the safer route.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that I think there's a couple things. One is like, you can get a lot more done with more knowledge of more things. And so maybe my thing is being a generalist, you know, maybe jack of all trade, master of none is, you know, maybe that's, you know, my maybe that is my lane. to be out of the lane is to be in the lane. Dad. No.
Right. Come on, Dad, leave me alone.
And I think the problem with choosing, I do think, and I'm not saying, you know, I think there are times when you have to choose. But the problem with specialization is that the further you go into a field, the more specialized you get, the harder it is to find an opportunity to execute on that expertise. And this is, of course, generalizing. There might be other, other options. And so, you need to make sure that you're choosing a specialization that where there's lots of opportunity and that's not going to become obsolete and replaced by robots in the next, 20 years. But what I think where I get uncomfortable is that puts so much power in someone else's shoes over like my fate, I guess, that I have to rely on someone else to give me a job rather than create, rather than creating value and creating opportunities for myself. So, and I'm not saying everyone should be an entrepreneur, because I don't think that that's necessarily true. But as far as so I hope everyone listening take this. This is me talking personally about how I answer that question. I think I love learning, I love increasing my capabilities to be able to say like, oh wow, I can manage a team of 14 people that spread entirely around the globe. And I before I started in on this project that felt like it was, outside of my lane, like I never would have experienced that. And now I'm able to say yes, yes, that's something I can do so much more easily than I ever would have unless I had that experience. So I don't know. I guess that's the many ways I go with that question. How do you answer it? What do you say?
Yeah. I don't know. I legitimately have been struggling with that, like even with the podcast, and maybe this doesn't make the podcast, this episode per se, but just, if I was farming out editing or some of the busy work, could I be doing better work elsewhere? And, because I can do everything literally from the beginning to the end, I can do it all, because I know how to do all this stuff. But is that a detriment to me, or is it a strength, I guess?
Totally. I do think there's it's helpful to know, it's helpful to know how to do it. But the question, I think the more important question is whether you should be doing it, and when is are you able to add more value in other ways? But then it also becomes, to have someone else doing that, there's cost involved, and then then you have monetization.
You're paying somebody to do it, right?
You need to think about monetization and those kind of things. But but I think those are great questions to ask.
No, and I appreciate your answer. I feel like that was helpful to me because I feel like I feel guilty sometimes about not being able to sort of stay put. And maybe that's okay.
I think it's great. I mean, just the fact that you have this podcast, right? Like a lot of people are you're going to be a pastor and just do your pastor thing. And then like, why would you do this? But I think I love it. And I think it's fantastic and it's going to take you somewhere really interesting. So
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. That's good. That's good. No, still, pastoring me after all these years, from RA to,
it's mutual. It goes both ways.
To coach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I love it. So now that you're sort of in this entrepreneur world, and you've kind of maybe broken free from the, have to be a youth pastor sort of ties that you had. So how do you sort of see your Christianity playing out in your entrepreneurship?
Yeah. That's a great question. I think there's a couple different ways and it kind of varies project to project. With the Meaning Movement, I think it's like kind of the foundation of what I do. Not that it's present in all of my clients, it's very much based on, how they view the world and what they, want to be a part of our work. But it's, it's kind of foundational to like that. I believe we're made on purpose. And that we have something to say, that every person has something to say, and I want to help people find that. And that, kind of comes back to like, that's the core of my work, my mission statement, if you will. And so it's very much kind of the foundation of that project. My other projects, it's not as clear of like a one-to-one, but I think there's a couple ways that I view it. Is one is like, this is a, this is a, equipping me for better work down the other work. I don't want to say better, other work down the road, to have a bigger impact. I want to help as many people as I can. I want to grow the meaning movement as big as I can to help as many people as I can. So helping me learn how to scale. But then, you know, even within that, in interactions with my team and leading a team well, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't typically talk about my faith with them. But I do, you know, it's just because it's, you know, because it's me, you know, I think it's who I am. I know that, you know, I know that it comes through, and I, you know, some of them have told me the only reason I'm here is because of you. Which feels like a lot of responsibility, but it's cool to know that like I'm you know having a good impact as much as I'm able, in those ways. So doing right by my team and by our customers and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, well, I love that you can as one person say that it varies from job to job. You know, because I feel like people feel like you know if I'm not. You know, sharing the gospel every day or something, I'm not doing my job, you know, as a Christian. And that's just, it can depend on where you're at and what you're doing and, you know, what sort of, you can, you know, how your Christianity plays out in your work.
Totally. So I think totally. That's great. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Thanks.
Well, are you ready to jump into our final two questions?
Is that work for let's you? Do it.
Okay. Okay. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
When you said the final two questions, like, oh, shoot, did I miss the two questions? And I'm like, oh, wait, no, I've heard the podcast before. One of my first jobs was cleaning llama pens. And that was the strangest job I've ever had. Just literally raking up llama feces.
So you were just at a llama farm?
Yeah, you're right. How did you end up at a llama farm? Where we lived kind of a little outside the city. This is in Southern California. And our neighbors, it was like a very much like a lot of our neighbors had animals. And this neighbor had like, they had like 20 llamas. And so they needed someone to clean the pens. And so I paid pretty well for way back then. You know, bought some Jurassic Park action figures and, you know, it was
all you need.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was definitely the strangest job I've ever had.
Llamas are just really weird animals.
They look weird. They smell weird.
Yeah.
They're kind of fun though. Just because they're goofy. They're goofy
they
looking.
Are goofy. Yeah. They are. Just, they look like, Anyway,
I wish everyone could see that neck gesture did.
enough llama-ing.
Yes.
So then my final question for you is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom of God more into their work?
I think what I just jumped to is kind of what we've been talking about this whole time, is that like you're made on purpose, right? And that like I really believe that like everyone has a piece of the kingdom to build, and the more you understand who you are and how you were made to be who you are, the more you can embrace and live into that. And so it might not be the most practical, like go out and do this, but like go out and you know work on, you know, understanding your story, and find, you know, find the ways that like you can bring more of that goodness that only you can bring to the world.
I think that's great. I think that's great advice. And I think that's important for us Christians to be talking about. So
yeah.
I love that.
Awesome.
Well, Dan, so good to chat, man.
Yeah, this is great. Fun. Love it. I love it. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks a ton for coming on. It's good to catch up with you.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dan, and I just think the importance of thinking through, especially for somebody who's entrepreneurial, just thinking through this conversation of how do we think about our work? How do we think about what we do? How do we put this into a Christian context? It's just such valuable stuff. So I encourage you to check him out on the Meaning Movement. Go listen to the podcast. It's great stuff, what he's doing over there. So yeah, I encourage you to do all that. Make sure you're following me on all the socials. And right now you can swipe down to the bottom of your iTunes app and rate and review this podcast just to help get the word out. I would greatly, greatly appreciate that. That would mean a lot to me. I love reading those reviews and just what you're getting out of the podcast. It just means a lot that people are listening and getting something out of it. It's cool. So I really appreciate you doing that. And until next time, get out there and hustle.